Kopitar on the draw. And he wins it back to Foley. Scores! Oh my!
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. We have a bonus episode of All the Kings Men for you today. It is the pilot episode of our brand new podcast with Jim Fox and Alex Faust. The first one is here for you on this feed, but we will be launching a separate podcast just for Jim and Alex in the very near future, so keep your eyes and ears open for where and how to subscribe when it launches. For now, let's go out to the Darrell Evans podcast studio in sunny El Segundo, California.
Jim, I'm not wearing makeup. You're not wearing makeup. We're not on television. Where are we?
We're in a sound studio.
We're in the
beautiful Century City, California.
Centuries. I wish it was Century City. I think it's the Darrell Evans Memorial Locker / office they could find that was next to the men's room in the King's office.
So that's why the door is only 4 feet high?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct. We're doing a podcast.
When did this happen? Never done one.
This is like first time in years, not since I was in college, that I did anything talk radio related. Have you done radio? But besides like NHL radio, play-by-play kind of thing?
I have not. I subbed in for Nick and Daryl for a post-game talk show one night when they had to go to San Jose and we didn't do the game on TV. So I took calls after, but that's my experience
you
with radio.
You took calls?
Oh, yes. It was good.
How did that go?
We were in the midst of a 15-game losing streak, so probably not that well.
Well, we're not taking calls here. We could. Mm-hmm. We might. We may have a guest on eventually. But the genesis of this is you and I, and when we're on the road with the rest of the crew, we have great conversation about stuff that isn't necessarily Kings hockey. And we cover a lot in Kings telecast. We cover the Kings. We cover the opponent. A glimpse of what's trending, but it's kind of hard to take a look at the big picture. And we're opinionated. Well, at least you're opinionated and I'm wrong. That's the way that it usually goes.
First thing you've said correctly.
So I think what we're hoping to accomplish in a semi-entertaining fashion, hopefully for you listening, is to talk about the Kings, yes. But since you might listen on a game day or an off day or 15 days after the game is played, it is impossible to stay current. Not going to talk about the game. You saw the game last night. You'll watch the game tomorrow. You'll listen to it on the iHeart Network. Not going to talk about it. Maybe there's some overarching storylines, but probably not necessary for the here and now. It's impossible to stay current. So we're taking our scope outside of that. Big picture. Kings, NHL, sport of hockey, the realm of sports in Los Angeles. We might have some guests from each of those categories. So in short, this podcast starts where the Kings game ends. You like that?
Sounds good to me. I think we can... I like the idea of tackling some of the topics that we just don't have the time for on air. You just don't have. You've got to get into it. Yeah. A chance to maybe say something that needs a little bit more explanation as opposed to numbers and supporting things that way and topics and issues, but maybe get into the whys and hows and does it work, doesn't work, what's going on there. Like it.
Especially when we get to, you know, criticize referees with curse words involved, right?
I would never do that. I think that the officials are the best officials in the world, and I know perhaps a lot of people out there get upset with me sometimes when I stick with the rules, but...
We're going to get into that.
Yeah, that's something that's it's an interesting topic. I always, when I talk to people about that, I ask them if they can watch a game that doesn't involve the Kings or the team that you cheer for and see how much you complain about the officials. And it goes down 98% because you're really not thinking of that. You're not thinking of the win or the loss. You're just probably watching the game for entertainment. So you don't think of it that way. And I think that's a good test or challenge for anyone to take a look at it. Bad calls are made all the time. I've said it many times before. I love when I hear from my partner or for anyone else, how did he miss that? I love that because I'm going to tell you how he missed it. I'm going to show you how he missed it. If he's in the wrong position, he'll get criticized for it. But if it's just an area of our game, which is so fast, and sometimes you're blocked out, sometimes the angle's not there, then I love to hear that. How did he miss that? Well, you know what? There's a good reason why he missed it.
Well, guess what? This year, they won't have to miss as much. They have the benefit of modern 2019 technology of video review. We'll talk about that in a bit, because we're both kind of geeks when it comes to this stuff.
I've got a rant.
Oh, already?
On getting on officials.
Episode number one.
And it has to do with my highly respected peers who cover soccer. Ex-players who are now in the broadcast booth doing soccer. As players, and currently, they spend 90% of the game trying to deceive the official. 90% of the game is faking, exaggerating, embellishing. And then when the ref misses something, they get mad at him. What? How consistent, how inconsistent is that? You're spending your whole career, and then you get into a situation where you're watching it on TV, you get the replay, they slow it down. Oh, he dove on that one. Oh, he didn't dive. There was contact. Well, you know what? Stop trying to fool them, and maybe they'll get it right more times than not.
Hashtag Neymar.
How was that?
Well, that was a great rant.
Let me roll wow. over on that one.
Wow. I think this...
Ouch!
This,
oh, my ankle.
This might actually work out, this podcasting thing. I think we're rolling along on this. So... I'm going to get into that aspect of it in just a bit, because we're both geeks when it comes to the rule book. We read it back to front. We'd like to think that we have a handle on it. There's some nuances that come along every now and again, but it's important to know the rules of the game, and especially this year when there are so many changes and so many wrinkles. But if you hang around for a good 10 minutes or so, I'm going to get that in just a little bit. Before we get there, I think we'd be remiss without talking something Kings related, and whether, again, you're listening to this after the season is opened or as we're on the season opening road trip or something like that. I think getting a big picture, again, handle on this team will help guide our conversation as the year goes along here. So you and I have talked a lot about expectations for this team, and it's interesting where they're at right now. Because they are, in many ways, a new team. New players, new philosophy, new coach, new plan. That's the big word, right? We keep hearing the plans for the coming season. Because I find it challenging when asked by fans, well, what's going to happen? I don't know. I mean, more so than usual, I don't know.
I'm in the same boat because I watched the group, the core, have success, the ultimate success. And then there's been some changes. There's been a lot of changes to the roster. More in support role players, but still guys that you just can't replace because they have leadership. They have, they understand in-game that critical moment of a game where they have to do their job, and then they help other guys do their jobs. And when you put that all together, it works. Those kinds of guys may have gone away, retired, or moved on, or for whatever reason, you get old and you no longer can keep up. The difficult part is this. The system being brought in by Todd McClellan is not a tweak. It is a complete overhaul. And for that reason, maybe the record is affected early in the season, which happened last year for different circumstances, but when the Kings got behind the eight ball and they could not dig their way. There was no way. It was, numbers are not my strong point, but the record was not good early. I would have to say I'm expecting the same type of record for different reasons early, because they're going to be learning a system. They're going to be learning how to incorporate it into game speed. And that's something, one thing on a podcast I'd like to stay away from is cliche, but they're thinking the game right now and they're not playing it. And that might hurt.
How hard is it? Because you're learning, you're not only learning something new, you are unlearning the old.
And the old was extremely successful.
Right.
So that's the most difficult part. I'm trying to put myself into the game, or as a new coach, and I only had 9 coaches in 10 years. So that's
just how, a few.
Yeah. I was a coach killer. But
I could totally see that.
It's just,
you took a lot of penalties too. You were a miscreant.
Exactly. I stayed away from that. It's to be able to react is a difficult thing because you have to apply it in game situations time and time and time again before you get used to it, before you're not thinking. And, Todd said it the other day, Tom McClellan, great quote. We don't work hockey, we play hockey. And I think they're still right now, as we start the season, in the work mode, which is okay. It's normal. It's natural. And this is not an excuse. I think the end result will be much better if you take it a step by step by step early and get it done that way.
By the way, I challenge anybody to look up your penalty minute record. And there's not many.
If there's anything over like 20 in 1 year, it's because I had a 10-minute misconduct. That's basically it. So
I'd be shocked if you even had one of those.
Well, I had a few of those. I think my approach I take to officiating is based on how much of a jerk I was on the ice. You said it, I'm a nerd for the rule book. I am. So, you know, if they missed it, I was in their face. I had good records, and it just, you know, I can imagine what they're going. You know, this team doesn't even win. They don't know how to win. All they do is complain. And was able to establish some pretty good relationships because of the back and forth. And back then, the officials gave it back to you as much as you gave it to them. So it was good. But I think from a far away position now, I think, and you know what? I want the Kings to win every single game, but when you're in the game, when you're playing the game, I think the emotions are a little bit higher. Yeah.
You played 77 games in 1982-83 and had a grand total of 8 penalty minutes. You had 48 one year.
None of them were deserved. None of them.
Not a single one. 143 for your career. Wow, so there was a major in there.
That's more. I think I was given, if I'm not mistaken, twice in my career, I was given 5 minutes for fighting. And of course, neither time.
What?
And neither time did I throw a punch. So I was
that
probably.
Is shocking.
Yep. Dwayne Sutter, one night in the island, I scored a goal and jumped me. Maybe Daryl called him up. Even before I knew Daryl, but and he just started wailing on me. I ended up with 5 minutes. I got a goal too, though. I had a goal.
But then, that doesn't matter. Yeah. You get the 5 minute major, and now you forever are a fighter. Mm-hmm. You're an enforcer now. Let's get into this discussion on rules because I think it intrigues both of us, and it sets the table for league wide what is a continuation of a new era in the NHL. This league. I've said it on air, and some people have said, wow, it's a little bit backwards, and they're still too conservative, and blah, blah, blah. This league is one of the most progressive in sports when it comes to the incorporation of video review. We had a video at our annual broadcast meetings in New York from, I want to say 1992. I'll have to double-check the year. Rangers and Penguins. I believe it was a playoff game. And the puck was shot through the net. Now, you can imagine standard definition television in the early 1990s. It's really, really hard. Like, the puck changes directions. You could see on a replay, it does. Nobody knows what's going on. And the shock of everybody that they actually looked at it, then they went to look at the net. And yeah, there was a hole in the net. And they gave him a goal. But I'm thinking to that and saying to myself, was that the start of now the microscopic looks that we get on video review? It's incredible how it is. Stan Bowman was coaching the Penguins. It was, I believe, the 93 season against the Rangers. Pretty incredible to think that back then they were scrutinizing it, and everybody was just incredulous. How could you overturn a goal? How is that possible? It was a goal on the ice. How do you take it away? Well, now we have a few more tools to do that. So we're going to go through some of the rules here in just a moment.
It should be. Hockey should be the game that uses video review more than the other game because it's fast. The one thing that comes to mind is tennis on a serve or on a ball. Is it in? Is it out? Well, you can't see it in real time. So that's why you go to the review. In hockey, baseball basketball and football, you kind of know where the next play is developing. In football, you normally line up. You have a huddle. You have offense and defense separate. In basketball, half-court offense. You get down there. You set up. You get into a X's and O's position where you kind of know where the ball is going. Baseball is probably the only one you don't, because he can, you know, he can spray it one way, not the other way. It can be a pass ball. It could be a wild pitch. It's happening. You know where it is. You know it's starting on the mound every single time. In hockey, it could start in the corner. It could start over here, this face-off circle. It could be a change. You have changes on the fly. So nothing stops. It's so fast.
No other sport has that.
You need to incorporate the video to help.
So I'm going to flash back then to two of us sitting in my apartment in April last year, and we're watching Game 7, San Jose, Vegas. And what you told me, the most controversial moment of the playoffs happened.
They will change the rule on that, and that will become reviewable. No question.
Joe Pavelski. Was it a penalty? Was it not? Doesn't matter, because they had no recourse. What they decided became fact.
They missed it. And they missed. I was in a similar circumstance in junior hockey where there was a scrap going on, a fight. Our defenseman slammed the other guy down. Pool of blood on the ice. Pool. They had to stop the game, get the Zamboni out, do it before they continue. So the referee kicked our guy out of the game. Well, what happened was the guy's head hit the ice, his helmet broke and cracked, and it went into his skull and created a pretty nice gash. He wasn't really hurt, but he was sliced open, and that's the reason for the blood. Well, they kick him out of the game. And it's the same thing with Pavelski. They see that the devastating injury that took place, and you're trying to come up with what happened here. Now, they called something that didn't happen. That is a mistake. That is a glaring mistake. That's more of a mistake than missing something. I think as we talked that night right away, I've talked about that for years, and I don't think I'm the only one, especially with major penalties when it came to playoffs and you lose the guy for the rest of the game. And you go, wow, maybe that wasn't, you know.
And this was the situation, end all situations, because not only is the major, then the four goals.
Yeah, if it's a minor, you get one goal, and then Vegas gets a chance to reset.
Sure.
You know, they get a chance to go. And, you know, I would argue that it wasn't even a penalty. I would argue this, that that type of play happens time and time again during the course of any game.
Yeah.
Time and time again during a game. So, but, you know, you want to give them 2 minutes for cross-checking, that's fine. 2 minutes for interference, something like that, that's fine. But
and can you live with that? If that was, because this is, I'm going to go through here, list them off one by one, and we'll read the exact interpretation. But my big question central to this is, how would you adjudicate that call if you had to do it today? And would you be okay with reducing it to a two-minute minor?
I would be okay with reducing it to a two-minute minor, but much like the league did, I think you still have to keep the penalty there. Even if you buy my argument that maybe it wasn't, I think you can look at it and say he pushed, he outstretched his arms and he made contact. I think you have to at least keep the penalty there, because then you're really, and again, you know, you might get into it, the double minor situation where you can wipe it completely off because it didn't happen. You know, your own teammate did it or something like that. But that's different than a major.
So this is rule 20.6 in your rule book if you're scoring at home. Referees shall review all plays that result in the assessment of any major penalty, other than a major penalty for fighting, for the purposes of confirming or modifying their original call on the ice. The only person that has authority to decide whether to uphold or reduce that is the referee on the ice who made the call, not Toronto.
And I like that. I was completely dead wrong when they started the video review and they allowed the official on the ice to make the call. I thought when that happened, I came out and said, I want the official on the ice to make the call. But then, you know, after seeing a few of them, you could see, well, that ref maybe doesn't want to embarrass himself, or he doesn't want to look like, you know, and my favorite show, NCIS, don't apologize, it's a sign of weakness. So it looks like you're apologizing, so you don't want to do that. And then because there's so many nuances in specifically the goaltender interference area, I think by having one group, a consistent group doing that, instead of 12 different officials, 24 different officials, then I think you have a better chance of getting it correct and consistent within the rules. But I was wrong when they first came out. I thought it was best to keep the referee, but he's got so many other things going on. His heart is probably pumping. He got emotion going on. I think it's better for a room to sit back, take a deep breath, and make a call.
Would you be okay with this being the same way as goalie interference and that Toronto handles it? Or are we okay with the referee on the ice assessing this one?
This one, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I think I'm 100% on board with it because, again, you're just reducing a major to a minor. And I think that's something that officials can objectively do it. And I think everyone realizes now, whether you get mad at it or not, everyone, the fans, the viewers, the media, the players realize that in real time, you can't catch everything. You can't tell if the shoulder contacted the chin, or was it shoulder glancing off shoulder up into the chin, or vice versa. A whole bunch, you can't see that real time. So that's why, you know, you need that.
Yeah. It's incredible. We both saw the same, it had to change. And credit the NHL and the general managers for realizing that there was an egregious mistake here. And they corrected it. In addition to that is this whole Rule 37, Rule 38 about video review and coaches' challenges. Kind of the same vein. Coaches' challenge this year, for all intent and purposes, is the consistent enforcement of when you decide that there's something wrong with a potential goal that was scored. So situations that are subject to review, still initiated by Toronto, the black and white stuff, puck over the line, was it kicked in, was it play with a high stick, et cetera, et cetera. The three areas that you can challenge for now as a coach: offside, same as before. Goalie interference, same as before. And then there's the missed stoppage. This was the other big thing in the playoffs. Off the hand. Really, really, really hard to tell in real time. But now it's available.
And it's needed. I think on the hand pass, San Jose, St. Louis, I believe just by, if I'm recalling, I think that the goaltender was the only one that saw the hand pass. The defenders, the defensemen, they're jostling, they're looking around. I believe the action ref, the ref that's closest, I believe he was blocked out. The back ref, you know, it happened completely in front of the player on the ice, so he wouldn't be able, so there's a lot of things that go on there. But you need that. And again, they made the adjustment to it. And I know that, you know, the puck going out of play is another. I've been on that bandwagon for years. It's a boundary. Every other sport that has a boundary, was this 2 feet in, college, 1 foot in, baseball, fair or foul, hockey, you know, it's a boundary. So if it goes out and you don't see it, go to a video review. And they touched on that. So the one thing that I think they've done is they simplified the coach's challenge by making more things challengeable, but they've also made it more punitive. Because if you're wrong, and you can challenge as many times you want, but if you're wrong, penalty. And then it grows, that penalty grows if you get it wrong a second time. So minor to double minor.
This, it's going to put a lot of pressure on that video review or that video room, the video coaches room. Each team has two video coaches with them. It was pressure before. Can you imagine the pressure now?
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned it on air. I don't know if it'll go this far because what I think is going to happen is the challenges are going to actually go down because the punishment is going to make you take a step back before you really go to it. But would it be beneficial for teams to hire ex-officials to be part of their video staff so that they can get maybe a more informed, experienced opinion of whether that was goaltender interference? And that's maybe.
Wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a consultant, line one, get Mike Lego, retired official, lives here in Southern California. Hey, Mike, what do you think? Should we go for it? Because, again, if you get it wrong, you're on the hook now. It wasn't like before, and this is why the simplification of major versus minor, of Coach's Challenge. It is all to remedy something. It's not, we're not adding things here. And it may look like that, but we're not adding things. We're trying to remedy something that is egregiously wrong without giving incentive for coaches to use the system as like an extra timeout.
That's the thing that is not talked about the most that I think is part of it. I think coaches were using it, right or wrong, just to get a stoppage in play. And I think the NHL also picked up on that. So that's why, regardless of what's going on, you're wrong, you get a penalty.
So we have those available. One more area that's a review type rule, rule 60.3. So the referees now on a double minor penalty, high sticking double minor where blood is drawn, have the option but not the obligation to review video of the play for purposes of confirming whether the apparent injury was actually the stick of the player being penalized. This is only for a double minor, not for a high stick. And I'm sure there will be instances this year of player was caught by his teammate's stick or his own stick. Well, why didn't you review that? This is only for double minor. And weirdly, this has been done off the book a couple of times. I think there was a situation in Vancouver, and I don't know the exact game, where the referee, if I recall, looked up at the video board, recognized his mistake, and corrected it. This was outside the scope of the rule book, but at least now it's codified.
And you know what? I think that players on the opposition team, the team that it goes against, if they wipe it off, or even in the instance you're talking about where the referee used information maybe he wasn't supposed to get, I think they don't have a problem with that. I think they, you know, they want to get it right. And they, even if it goes against you in that type of a play, because I think it's, again, black and white. Mm-hmm. Was it your stick? Was it his stick? It's not, you know, how hard was he pushed into the goaltender? You can argue that a million. When it's black and white, mm-hmm. they've got it right.
Couple more, and then we'll kind of wrap things up here. Helmets. Everybody remembers the Torrey Krug play from the playoffs. Loses his helmet at one end of the ice, sprints, full tilt boogie all the way to the other end. Huge hit, open ice check. It was brilliant, right? Can't do that anymore. You lose your helmet, you got to put it back on immediately. And there's some nuance to this as well. You're assessed a minor penalty if you do not exit the playing surface or retrieve and replace your helmet within a reasonable period of time. There's a lot of leeway. Penalty would be a delay of game if you don't do it in time. What's interesting here is vicinity. And this, I'm almost positive, will happen in one of our games where a player is in a scrum in the corner, loses his helmet, puck is in the area, he makes a play on it. Is it legal? Is it illegal? Are we okay with this?
Hesitation. I'm okay with what they're, but just using the terminology reasonable leads to gray area. Then it leads to opinion of the official. But I could see, you know, the black and white would be this. Shots taken from the blue line, two guys jostling in front of the net, helmet gets knocked off, but the puck lies right there on the rebound. He puts it in without his helmet on. Goal, it will count. Because it happened, he didn't have to leave this area. It has to happen within a, you know, very tight time frame. Okay, a guy is on a breakaway. And in pivoting from forward to backward or vice versa, the defender tries to reach. The helmet comes off. And now he's got the decision. Do I chase? He's on a breakaway, but he's still within stick reach. Do I go or I don't? If I get my helmet and pick it up, he's in. If I go to the bench, he's in. I think, again, now you give him one chance, meaning one swoop of the stick from that defender without the helmet. If he gets the puck off the stick right away, no penalty. But if he misses that, then continues to skate after him, then he's going to go to the penalty box. So those types of things will happen time and time again. There might be a learning curve there. And then the other part of the rule is, you know, if you on purpose intentionally knock another player's helmet off, you will get a penalty. So that's... that's, again, gray, and two guys are jostling. Mm. Did he do it on purpose? I think we can all see, you know, the hand, you know, raised and kind of back of the head, swat the back of the head type of thing where the helmet comes off. But, you know, it's all player safety. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Player safety is involved, and they should be involved. And I'm sure the players are on board about that and consulted, and they give their input, and that's the reason you're going with it.
What if you're Darrell Evans and you're at elbow height anyway, and you decide intentionally to have your helmet be loose, knowing that you're going to engage in a battle in the corner? Whoops, comes off. That's a penalty on the other team. Are we going to see that kind of gamesmanship?
I think you will. And I think you'll see, you know, but that's why enforcement of the chin strap will be there. You know, that's where it gets very interesting. But I think that you can work it where you have the clasp of the chin strap and it's just ready to come off. And, you know, how much, I think we're probably overdoing it here. I don't think the players are going to go that far. But I would not be surprised to see, as you mentioned, gamesmanship that way.
The last new rule is kind of more, we've had some really intriguing discussions with Jarrett Stoll about this, is the face-off location dynamic. And what effectively you have here is two things. One, he unintentionally knocks the net off, or the goalie unintentionally knocks the net off location. First of all, I think we both agree this is overdue because teams intentionally do this all the time. Really?
When he was coaching here with the Kings. And this was when the rule came in that you could. He specifically there talked about, I want to be able to decide which side that faceoff is going to be taken if the team going on the power play. Let's punish that team even more. He brought it up more than once. He never, you know, went on a soapbox and thought he was going to change anyone's mind about it. But I think that's a good insight into Darrell and how many he breaks the game down and how, you know, the small areas that he breaks it down into and discussing that. And I think then they, you know, after a while, people start listening and they start hearing that and they go, you know what? It's a tweak that's really not going to affect the game, but will increase the chance of scoring. It will.
Power play team, the attacking team has the choice of which dot they want. Following an icing, you have the choice of which dot you want. When the situation with the net coming off, you have the choice of which dot you want. So it's basically when there's some sort of infraction.
First, face off on a power play.
Yep. Yeah.
You get to decide. After that, well, if you know, well, it wouldn't be icing because the other team can't ice it anymore. But if the other circumstances, but the first face off that takes place in the offensive zone after a penalty, you get to decide. Yep.
There was a question that I had on this. Because there's a wrinkle in the rule book about delayed penalty, let's say, and a stoppage of play, and whether or not you know you're allowed to knock off the net. So let's say you're a defending team, and there's a delayed penalty coming against you, and you still unintentionally knock the net off. The way that I understand the rules, and again, I encourage people, you can interpret me if I'm interpreting this incorrectly, because you have to keep your personnel on the ice. Let's say you're scrambling 5v6 and you're tired. You have to keep those players on the ice if the stoppage is unintentionally knocking your own net off. So you would start your penalty kill with four tired players that is not your normal penalty killing unit. Am I interpreting that right? I don't know if I am or not.
So there's a penalty develops or not?
Yes. So it's a delayed penalty. 6-on-5. They've pulled their goalie. They've got the extra attacker going. And you're in there for 90 seconds. You're desperately defending. And then this situation comes about. Maybe you're cracked.
Then one of your men goes to the penalty box. I think you will have the opportunity to make the change. I'm unsure. Okay. It's an interesting point. It's a, you know, it's a deeper level point. I think that because of the change in manpower, I believe you will be able to make that change.
Okay. I'm going to have to circle back on that one.
So I think it's going to happen. You know, you're scrambling, and then a lot of times when you're scrambling, you do take a penalty, then you're scrambling even more. All of a sudden, the net comes off. Well, okay. I think you're going to, because of change in manpower, I believe.
It's all interesting stuff, and that's why we're going to reread the rule book 2-3 times, and we're going to be nerds about it over the course of the season. So this is a glimpse of what you get when we're off air, when we're at dinner. This is the kind of stuff we talk about beyond, you know, Pinot Noir and whether it's acceptable to drink it out of a solo cup or not.
Never.
Really?
Oh.
Even if it's cheap?
Excuse me?
Even if it's cheap Pinot Noir?
We do not use the word cheap in wine. We use the word inexpensive.
Oh, okay.
Cheap is not the word to use. Okay. So,
what if it's cheaply made? Mm-hmm. And it's just
the wine is never cheaply made. No.
No?
No. They
just leave a bunch of grapes in the sun and see what happens?
That's how it gets ripe. Yes. You see what happens. But
and on that note,
I want just one more thing.
Yeah.
And I know I've said it on the air before, and it's just kind of a challenge, specifically more to people in the building watching. If the referee blows a call, but you didn't see it happen live, hold your criticism.
You suck.
Hold your. I mean, I'm just
Ooh.
Trying. I'm just. If you did see it, and that's my philosophy on air. If I see it happen live while I'm watching the game, I'm not watching monitors when the game's going on. I'm watching it live.
You bleeping moron! You cost us the game.
So that's what you try to do, and you try to okay. If I saw it, then I think I'll be more critical. If I didn't see it, and I need a slow motion replay to take a look at it and realize that it was a call or a miscall, then I think you have to back off a little bit. No one has to do what I'm saying. I would just, in the back of your mind, maybe you can approach it that way as opposed to realizing that. And you know what? Some calls do cost games. They do. They cost the game. I know there's still 12 minutes left in the game or 8 minutes left in the game, but it does cost you the game. But
I think there's a conspiracy theory against the Kings. All the refs are out to get us. They don't. They hate us because they ain't us.
And that's one of 31, becoming 32 opinions that every team. I've heard it from ex-Kings players who aren't involved with the Kings anymore, and you know, they'll come to me and say, you know what, this is earlier on. You know, you're a little too hard on the official because they don't have that emotional tie as much anymore. So you don't become as critical. When you're emotional, man, every call's wrong.
Gary Bettman's going to just give you a phone call and maybe invite you to like an in-person hug or something. We've been really kind.
I'm just trying to be consistent. Again, if anyone listened to me when I was younger and just starting, they realized because my attachment to the current players on the ice was 1 year removed, I was on the officials all the time to the point where it becomes the reason why they lost. And most times, 99.9% of the time, it is not the reason they lost. There are those ones that cost you the game. It happens. But I think as I have gotten away from it more and more and more, I get paid by the game, so I want the Kings to win.
I get paid by the word.
I want the Kings to win. I want them to win. I want them to win for a lot of reasons. And when they won twice, it was very apparent to see how emotional it was. But sometimes they don't lose because the officials make the wrong call.
Can I get paid by the word? That'd be nice.
You get paid by the depth of the intonation of your voice. That's what you get paid for.
And on that note, hug a referee, and we'll see you next time.